You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Michael Keplinger.
The marketplace has changed so much that you can't rely on, there's so many brands on the retail shelf that the packaging is all there is. And so our work is looking at that and understanding, and we think about strategy. You know, there's some aspects that I would almost go as far to say we turn traditional branding and brand development work upside down on its head.
Michael is a partner at Smash Brand, an agile brand strategy agency for consumer packaged goods that specializes in complete approach to market research, product design, and testing. After earning a degree and early career in computer engineering, Michael's entrepreneurial drive took hold, and he soon found himself developing market strategies for his own consumer product business. There, he quickly found a talent for connecting seemingly unrelated dots to discover room for innovation and opportunity. At Smash Brand, Michael makes ample use of his philosophy regarding consumer products that the key to success is about seeing everything from the eyes of the consumer and anticipating how they will react to a product or message. Michael currently leads Smash Brand's research team to develop strategies for clients and to optimize various aspects of branding and packaging through testing. The best foot forward approach to optimizing from a consumer perspective is likely the single biggest impact on marketing any brand can do. And over the past decade, he's developed an agile methodology and proven platform for consumer testing and integrated it directly into Smash Brand's entire process. Michael, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I'm always fascinated. We talk about branding here and how it's the really kind of the classic multidisciplinary job. I won't say industry because we work everywhere, internally, externally. But I'm fascinated as to how people end up here in branding, brand strategy. And you come from computer engineering. And to me, that's a different hemisphere of the brain than I'd say most working in branding end up with. So how did you get here?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's probably very atypical, maybe like a reboot or even something more drastic where you've changed the operating system of your computer.
See, you're still even in the computer mindset, even right? In telling the story.
So the story of how that came about, I think, starts with after that work and that early career, really about 6 years. And my business partner today, I met him. We worked at Raytheon together. And he kind of tucked me into leaving Raytheon. We were working for Raytheon back then in a very, very technical role. And we started a health company, health products company in sports nutrition. And we just were really recognized, jumped on an opportunity and executed very well. Got lucky in some ways, but just had a really good product and built that into an entire brand. And and naturally, with my background, I led the finance and the operations. And he has always been and is even today with Smash Brand, the more kind of creative type. And so he would run the marketing and sales. And so we had a business and it did very well. But I always really had a goal to go back to business school full time, and I stuck with that. So I left, retained ownership, but kind of left my active work there, and went to business school. And surprisingly, thinking I was going to be heavily focused on what I was good at, what I was doing, operations and finance, something just really resonated with me in marketing, particularly market research and consumer psychology. Learned quite a bit about really good methodology for consumer surveying And in business school, what they let you do too is kind of do some independent studies. And so I kind of picked the brightest other students, and we went through three rounds of independent studies on these types of market research projects that were geared specifically at my own products and my own business. So I was getting a lot of value out of that. and really now interfacing with Kevin, my business partner, he was a business partner there also, more on a marketing side. And when I left, that vacuum of the role I had to do, we filled that, brought a partner on. And so when it kind of finished up, I did a tech startup. And, you know, that was certainly a lot of tech and a lot of marketing as well. And then we came back to our brand, and it was just time to market it, to rebrand it. It was a really big endeavor to. And so we were working side by side, marketing. He was really focused more on the creative side. I'm focused more on the kind of the data-driven side and the strategy, and that's really where SmashBrand was born. That was the part of the entire running a business that we found the entrepreneurial spirit in, the creation, the continuous kind of effort on that. And so that's how I landed here, and why it really, really works for us as an agency. Also, I think it takes roots from where our partnership came from and our strengths and where they overlap, and then certainly large pieces where they don't. So we kind of bring those together to create a unique process of how we do things.
Well, that's fascinating. And there was a nugget in there that it seemed like might have been critical to the pivot point, where you talked about the fascination with consumer behavior. And it's funny, I my own background, I have a degree in theater arts and psychology. And the psychology side is what fascinates me, and I think led me to branding and marketing. The creative side is just generally useful. But the psychology side of that, the consumer behavior, is sounds like it was a pivot point for you. And even in your work, you have a very consumer-centric approach to what you're doing at SmashBrand. Talk a bit about what that approach looks like for your work and how you help clients.
Sure. We are certainly not unique as an agency that knows, and it's common practice that, you know, it's brand, really that work up front, that strategy work, is so critically important to defining a brand. And so much of my work is there also. Sounds like you're pretty involved in that as well, and just kind of understanding that strategy. And so for us, as being narrow, niche down to really focusing on consumer products, that's where our background was, that's where, you know, our passion is, and when you bring something into that 3D world of a retail store, or the physical something in the hand, you have to think about it differently. And I think what's also kind of adding more context here is I think that the marketplace has changed so much that you can't rely on, there's so many brands on the retail shelf that the packaging is all there is. And so our work is looking at that and understanding, and we think about strategy. You know, there's some aspects that I would almost go as far to say we turn traditional branding and brand development work upside down on its head. And because we have this philosophy that the packaging for so many brands and so many consumers too, it is the front door, and sometimes the only marketing medium that they have. It's certainly the only one that every customer sees. So we focus so heavily there, and having that impression, and we have this idea of a first impression, and so it all starts at the packaging level, and certainly a brand is just as important, and a brand, you know, Kickstarter can launch a product that is so product first and has tremendous success, and they kind of circle back to building a brand on top of that. And there's stories out there today are tremendously successful brands that didn't start in this traditional way of really deep thought about the brand. What are our values? What is our mission statement? And all these kind of positioning statements that are very traditional marketing, they're certainly important. But I think that they also, when in this particular situation with products on the shelf that consumers, they're low price points, they don't really respond to ads and they don't look at them. So the engagement with it is different today. And so our whole philosophy is kind of built around that. And on the tail end, probably the unique part that we do, and really as we talk too, and where it comes from, is certainly what we put out there, we believe will be successful coming from that strategy. And I guess to your question too, get inside the customer head. And when you frame it, like I've discussed, and you think about that store, it's everything that's going through my head as I walk down the storefront. And you know, humans are very, very complex people. We're multifaceted. We've got a lot of things, and call it baggage. There's a lot of stuff in their head that everything that they respond to and everything that they see is basically processed through, and it influences how things are interpreted. And so that perception work is not in a vacuum without really a deep understanding of the consumer. And then on the testing side, validating that in ways that, you know, obviously are aligning with the goals of the brand to sell more product and get more market share and really resonate with consumers.
Well, I want to make sure we come back to testing, because I think that's kind of a classic marketing strategy that's easy to get lost in our digital world. But you talked about it all starting with packaging. And I think that's so true. I love packaging. I do the grocery shopping for our family. And I think because I'm so digitally focused, people are surprised to learn that I don't use any grocery app or have it delivered here, even in these crazy times. I enjoy going out and looking at products on the shelf. And it's because of this this work that we do. But talk a bit about the packaging recipe for success.
Sure. I think, you know, and I'm glad you're asking these in this kind of order, because everything I just talked about is the background information that I really want to make sure is understood when you think about it. So you have all these pieces, you have all these interactions that are processed almost at rapid speed when a consumer looks at a packaging, and it's instantaneously absorbed in their mind and processed. We can't even really rationalize how that happens so quickly. But a product and that first foot forward approach that we talk about, it's not the only thing that needs to be communicated. There's category drivers. There's something that if you don't check a few boxes when I'm in a consumer shopping a category, you're not even part of the selection set. I'm looking at other products. And so those are important pieces. And then and some of the things you need to communicate, which are a combination of words and visuals, are and even spatial elements where there's, you know, white space and things like this, they all work together to do that job. And so the recipe, as we speak about a recipe, it's all those pieces coming together at once. And it's tricky too, because you want to convey, for example, let's say you're trying to sell a food product that is a premium product and, you know, trends in the marketplace too, and you've identified that you want to feel very, very healthy, healthier than the other options in the market. So that perception of healthiness that is conveyed through this recipe that we're talking about is a critical thing that you want to measure, but you have other aspects that are important too. And so as you go and think about packaging, of putting all those pieces together, there's a sense of a yin and a yang and a push and a pull. And if you go too far and you're trying to optimize one thing, it may actually hinder something else, some important piece of, you know, the brand or the positioning of the product or the brand that is important to convey to consumers. And so that is that's really how we define and think about this recipe of a packaging. You know, it's got to do a lot of things in the buying process. And in a consumer product on a shelf that's, you know, say under $20, it happens rather quickly, but you still have to grab that attention and you have to draw the consumer in, and then you have to quickly communicate, is this product even something that is relevant to me? Should I even care about that? Okay, it is, but so are these other three products. Now, how can I quickly communicate my differentiators and these kinds of things? And that recipe, all the job of it comes down to that job of the packaging. It has to do all of those things, and it has to do them well, or you don't perform.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand-building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... you get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show.
So talk a bit about the role that testing plays in getting to that recipe that works.
Testing is nothing new. The big brands do it. And, you know, the Procter & Gamble's and Johnson & Johnson's of the world, they are notorious for hiring multiple creative agencies to come up with concepts, take those concepts and move over to a big Nielsen or something and spend, you know, a big pile of money to test this and maybe come back and iterate such as this. But so the ideas of it are pretty sound. But for us and integrated into our process, you know, it's still critically important that you do that strategy work. You have to bring, you know, great ideas, great design together. And anything we put forward, we believe will be successful. And at that process, I think so many brands are, you know, absent the ability to test, are left with what's left is a subjective opinion on, you know, the CEO likes this color and, you know, yeah. The brand manager likes this other thing. And so there's this internal conflict about a voting mechanism that is highly subjective. And for us, it is about getting in the middle of that process. This is just, I'm kind of describing one type of test that we do where we will, you know, jump in there with consumer data, put it in front of the consumer, and coming from a perspective first and foremost of performance. So we will likely pick some competitors, they'll tell us competitors, or we recommend some competitors and put it up against and do our best. Obviously, this is not a real buying experience. So there's no better way than looking at sales, but you can do that in digital, but it's very, very difficult when after a product is on the shelf to test 2 different types of design, so to speak. So we do our best to really understand that buying experience and mimic it and simulate this in this buying experience. And, you know, starting with purchase intent. And then, as I spoke before, you know, part of that strategy work is really and we're designing two of these drivers, these category drivers and your brand drivers, is using this this kind of testing and consumer targeted consumers that, you know, are likely to buy in your audience of that product, and measure these things and make it very quantifiable. And we focus very heavily on the relative scoring. We're not trying to predict market performance. What we're trying to do is say, all things equal, because I don't control as an agency whether or not the grocery store Kroger is going to pull that product onto their shelves, and the effectiveness of your brand activation and all these things, it's very complicated. But that's okay, because what I'm focused on is keeping everything the same and putting these things in here and being able to objectively show the clients how the performance of one design over another, or whether it's messaging that we're testing, will actually translate to market success. So all things considered, if you substitute concept A versus concept B, you should see an improvement of you know, some quantifiable number.
You know, that's it. I love that point because I think that's what can often get lost is another approach, because we know about, you know, this kind of thing and how it would work for the P&Gs of the world, but so many would think, well, that's not me. So they're left. There is no middle ground. There is nothing else other than, like you said, subjective opinion, which is dangerous. The other thing about all of this is that it's intriguing, because all of this work that you think of as this early stage of the process, and then you're going to hit the mark and you're off to the races. But this isn't a static moment in time, because the market changes, brands change, the perception of those brands change. What do you do when you've got, for one reason or another, a product or category that's stagnant?
Well, a lot of our work is precisely that. There's a lot of brands in the marketplace that have not changed in a long time. The packaging, for a number of reasons, it's just easy to not change it if it's, you know, that mentality of it's not broke, don't fix it. But they are facing tremendous competition. It's the barriers are down. It's so easy to launch a product, to be your own, you know, brand new product on the shelf, and you don't even have to pay much to just throw it on Amazon. And if you get the traction, then you actually, that's the provable point. You're going into retail if you're trying to move into big top retail. And so, and that was actually by self-selection of the 30 other brands that failed. And here's the one that won. So this is the market performance proving to the retailers of the world that you have a winning product. And so what comes on the shelf eventually is actually already a really good product, and these big brands are these challenger brands are coming in here and really disrupting what they had kind of taken for granted when it used to be more mass market. And so these are the brands we talked about, the big brands, the Procter and Gamble's and such. They get it, they've known it, but really I think where we shine is that smaller brand who is, I mean, and when I say small, a brand is very scalable. A consumer product is extremely scalable. You'd be surprised the size of a team when you've got a product in a store almost nationwide, or even including Canada, and there's tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, but they still are a rather small team with tight budgets and things like this, and they don't have these types of resources. And so for them, similar process, we might bring some additional testing in. And we're focused a lot on baselining against what they have in the marketplace. So there, why would it make any sense to bring something new and different to the market if it's not outperforming what you already have? And so we look really closely and audit where they are today. We kind of overlay that into the changes in the marketplace. You know, millennials are big topic that comes up because they think differently and they buy differently. And now they are, you know, the big driving force of purchasing behavior. And but typically what works for them is radically different than what's probably already on their label today, on their packaging, and maybe to some extent even what the brand stands for. And so those types of moves are risky to a brand, very, very risky, because if I'm protecting, you know, $20-30 million revenue of a product and distribution, I'm very worried of losing what I have. So what it becomes the norm is incremental change. We can jump into that and through the testing, reduce that risk, that apprehension, and show them that it's going to work and give them more confidence. Because in our opinion, really, that is the radical change that's coming through the dynamics of the marketplace and everything I just talked about. It's not guesswork what lands on the shelf anymore. It's done through, you know, selection of consumers and you know, the good stuff already bubbling to the top. And so that they have to retain that spot, they have to refresh, they have to think about what's changed and adapt.
You know, that is so true. And I think that it's another one of those examples where it happens more than folks think. They think of these monolithic successful brands as sitting over there just not changing. And if you look a little more closely, often they're doing exactly what you said, incremental change. Michael, as we start to wrap up here, what is, we've talked about risky brands, a lot of these concerning things, we're going to lighten it up a bit. What is a brand that has made you smile recently?
I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for saying this one, but I'm going to say it anyways. You know, Uber has really gotten a lot of heat. We use Uber, we like it, but you know, you hear those emotional stories about the drivers just kind of getting raked over the coals and not getting taken care of. And but deep down, it actually is a really great service that I think benefits. We all know the stories of taxis and they don't care about you, and it's just this whole racket, right? So they have recently gone through quite a big endeavor to really think that through. And I think what they've come down to is the high level idea of really building their brand around why they exist. And I think they even state their transportation is reliable as running water. everywhere for everyone. And that's so relatable. And they have challenges, and those challenges aren't gone and they're not going to go away. But they are solvable. But rather than trying to conceptually at a brand level throw Uber under the bus, they've really grabbed onto, they are a massive change agent in transportation, paid transportation in the world. And I think we'd all be sad if they went away. And so they've really focused their brand on that as a pillar on the top, and then creating some space for them to solve some of these other problems, which are solvable. So I saw that and through my lens, of course, thinking through and seeing that bigger picture. And I think that is a really smart rebrand for Uber.
Well, and it seems like so much in the zeitgeist, if a brand is going through a rough patch, we're quick to kind of throw it out with the bathwater. And I think that's a great example of one that does have a footprint that can do to have a pretty big societal role. And if you get back to that kind of why they exist, that's compelling. Michael, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, thanks for that, Nick. I think probably starting at smashbrand.com, our agency, where, we talk a lot more about our process of what we're talking about, whether you're a brand looking to bring a product to market, or we're really just trying to do it on your own and want to learn more about that process that we talked about here. I think if you can execute the across the spectrum, really, of getting that strategy, do that work up front, and then really in any ways you can to get that consumer feedback. But aside from that, we've got plenty of articles, and you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Michael Keplinger.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes that folks can find at onbrandpodcast.com. Michael, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. It's been a pleasure.
And a reminder, if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.